Welcome to Purdue Crop Chat, a regular podcast from Hoosier Ag Today and the Purdue University Extension Service, featuring Purdue Extension soybean specialist Dr. Sean Castile and Extension corn specialist Dr. Dan Quinn. This podcast is made possible by the Indiana Corn Marketing Council and Indiana Soybean Alliance. Your Indiana corn and soybean checkoff investments yesterday are paying off today. New research, new uses, demand creation, bringing dollars back to the farm. Check it out at yourcheckoff.org. Now your host for Purdue Crop Chat, Hoosier Ag Today's Eric Pfeiffer.
Thanks for joining us on the Purdue Crop Chat. Eric Pfeiffer here in West Lafayette, the Indiana Corn and Soybean Innovation Center. And gosh, it's been a while since we last spoke. The last time we got together, we were at the State Fairgrounds. And everything was underway. Dan was about to take his lovely wife out for their anniversary. I think he was about to blow a lot of money after all of my recommendations.
Midway or corn dogs or what was it?
Well, I think he had to take her on all the rides, so that was a bunch of money. Though it was $2 Tuesday, I think, so it yes. didn't. It didn't.
Yes. Cheapskate.
Yeah. It was his recommendation to do it that day, wasn't it?
Was. It was.
That's what it was all about. Dan Corn Quinn here to my left. Hello, Dan.
Hey, Eric.
And soybean Sean Castile here to my right. Hello, Sean.
Howdy.
And so Dan was doing that, and then I think we were talking what Ruth's Chris or St. Elmo's
something
he was
like
doing that night.
Yeah.
So what was it that you ended up? It was just the pork tent that you ended up doing.
It was. I'm a Purdue faculty member, right? I'm not a high end kind of person here. So
Denny's then is what you're saying.
Yeah, exactly.
lucky gal. But we enjoyed ourselves at the fair, so that was a fun time. And but now we're back in West Lafayette, and we're much closer to harvest. In fact, it's underway. It's well underway now. I think a lot of folks are out there. USDA came out with their report just yesterday. As we sit here and talk on Tuesday the 17th, USDA says corn 5% complete with harvest and soybeans ahead of that 6% complete.
Rocking and rolling.
I'm curious if that's like ever happened. Are soybeans typically ahead of corn? I don't.
Yeah.
Is that usual?
The mentality has definitely changed over the years. So we tend to get those beans out of the ground pretty quick with harvest, and especially whenever we're planting them earlier. Now they're mature earlier. I think getting the soybean harvest going first does make a lot of sense.
You always bring up the, how kind of a diva corn is, with soybeans when you get to harvest
on
the back
end. One thing.
Corn is pretty resilient in terms of, harvest. You can harvest in the snow and all these different things. It's the beans that, when you get too dry and have these issues, then if you listen, you can hear the popping of the pods out there.
It is
and
a horrible
having a
sound.
Lot of harvest. Harvest issues, and you have to wait in the morning for the beans.
Oh, we're not waiting now. There's no dew.
Yeah,
I mean, we can roll as soon as, we probably don't even need to stop.
Yeah, soybeans are the more finicky crop when it comes to harvest.
I agree 100%. It is a frustrating crop when you look at harvest. There's no doubt about that.
Well, we're well underway. I mean, farmers are after it right now, and if you look at this forecast that we have coming ahead, Chief Meteorologist Ryan Martin tells us that we have maybe – potentially a little bit of rain coming through here with some rain coming from the Carolinas, some of this tropical stuff coming through, but that's just in, southeast Indiana. But otherwise, 10 days, maybe a couple of weeks here of just dry weather here throughout Indiana. And guys, they just may not stop. They just may roll these things 24/7, get this thing done. Forget Thanksgiving.
what you just said, right? The next time we're going to meet, it's like, we haven't harvested yet. It's been raining, or we had something else blow through. So you've just set the stage. Yep. Thanks, Eric.
Here's Eric's address.
Yeah, that's right.
I don't have anything to harvest of. But let's talk about these soybeans, Sean.
Yep.
You talk a lot about, when we do harvest, we do want some moisture on these things.
Yep.
You mentioned that it has been a little while since we've gotten some rain.
Yep.
Have we taken the top off of some of these soybeans that we've been talking all year? Record soybeans, even though you were a little chicken there.
I called 62 is what I believe I called.
No,
right?
I think you kept calling 61, and then finally you're like, okay, maybe 62. Once once USDA made the stretch.
Oh,
then,
no, no.
Then
I got a witness. I got two witnesses that I called 62 before the August report.
Not on this program. but I mean, you made the stretch with USDA.
Yeah.
But either way, I mean, we've been talking record yields throughout the season.
Yep.
Have we taken the top off of this thing now?
Yeah, I think there's certainly some of the early beans that were planted early that have already been cut. I think that crop was made. It didn't get the stress that we've had for the last 2 weeks or so. So those have been really good yielding beans. It's some of the ones that are coming off in the coming weeks that I think sprinkles have been taken off of this next wave of harvest. It's the one here in about 7 to 10 days that I wonder if we've taken icing off the cake now. So I still think we're going to have respectable yields. But whenever you look at seed fill on soybeans, it's August and September that's making that time, and I just think our seed size has been reduced. I think we've lost a few pods at the top with this dry weather.
And again, let's talk about this moisture that you talk about that you want. What do you want in that? I mean, ideally,
what I want is to be able to have the market. Let's start there. Have the market have a wider window than 1% grain moisture, right? You know, the idea you talk about corn. Oh, we can wait. We can go till snow. But yeah, you're harvesting at 25%, taking in, just pay for the drying. That's all I want. Just give me the ability to harvest soybeans a little wetter and just pay for drying, not have any other dockage that comes with it. I think that would open up a lot. But most of the elevators, you were, you know, if you're 15%, they're like, I don't know if I want to take that or not. I was like, you're giving us a 2% margin, right? 2 grained moisture percent. So ideally, yes, we want to be around that 14 to 13%. We don't get paid. Water isn't given back to us whenever we deliver something below 13%, right? That's what we get paid on. Bushels are 60 pounds at 13%. Well, it's not a true bushel anymore. It's not a volume. It's 60-pound chunks. 60-pound nuggets is what we get paid on. So if we're cutting beans at 10% versus the 13%, it's a 70-bushel crop. That alone, just on grain moisture, is a 2.5-bushel hit. If you really do the math, I put out an article last week on this, is that we get paid on 60-pound chunks. And if it's less than 13%, they don't add back in that 3% water weight. You are lost, right? And so that's the thing on this harvest and this weather that we've had on soybeans is to be as on the front side of that 14%, 15%. Again, these conditions, it's drying down quite a bit. So we're probably going to be running some 10s and 9s, unfortunately.
Dan, where are we at on corn? I've been hearing some corn yields come through. They sound pretty impressive. Mm-hmm. They sound pretty impressive. What are you hearing?
Yeah, I think, you know, it's kind of on Sean's point. It really comes down to when the crop hit maturity, and that's going to really dictate how much it's been impacted by some of these drought conditions. You know, what stands out to me, right, you know, corn's 5% harvested. That's, you know, 3 percentage points above the five-year average. But looking at the maturity, you know, you look at the crop maturity, it's about, you know, 19, 20 percentage points ahead of the five-year average. So that just kind of showcases how much further ahead the crop is, even from last year and the five-year average. It's dry out there. The crop is really shutting down. You know, some of the farmers that we work with down in southern Indiana had really outstanding yields, and I think that was a big function of their crop really kind of matured and finished off before the drought conditions in. Then the drought conditions kind of came in, dried stuff down, and allowed them to harvest, you know, in a timely fashion. So I think that did help. Now, on the flip side, there's going to be areas, especially you get more northern Indiana, you know, even kind of southeast Indiana, where they were a little bit delayed on their planting in certain areas, and that crop isn't really hitting maturity. It's hitting maturity now, but it's kind of been impacted by the overall, you know, drought conditions that we've had. So I've noticed, you know, a lot of fields with, you know, some premature ear drop. We always talk about with corn, you know, that ear shank. If it gets really hot and really dry and really stressed, you can lose lose a lot of the functionality of that ear shank where that eardrop tips over, kind of kinks that hose that, you know, that's where all the photosynthates and the assimilates are coming in the ear. So that could impact, you know, the overall size and weight of the kernels. Have noticed from some of the corn crop, just seeing that kind of that top senescence of that crop. You know, for corn, for the most part, we want it to senesce from the bottom up, but you get in really stressful conditions, it's really going to start impacting the top of that crop. And you did notice that even, you know, 3-4 weeks ago when it really kind of flipped that switch and it was in the mid-90s. I remember, you know, our Southeast field day at the end of August here, and it was like 96 degrees down there, and you could really tell that crop was just starting to kind of flip the switch in terms of shutting down. So so noticing some of that, so it's really going to be a function of, okay, when did the crop hit black layer, when did it hit maturity, and then what were the impacts of the conditions at that point in time. And I think there's a lot of crops out there that weren't quite at maturity, still were indent, were still trying to put some dry matter into those kernels, and they were probably significantly impacted by the hot, dry conditions.
I mean, we were thinking there for a while, I mean, not me because I don't enjoy it, but some people were like, hey, it's pumpkin spice season already, and then it like went back to 96 degrees, and it's like, you know, it was like a significant drop and then jump. And I mean, it went back and forth on us there for a little while.
So you're saying you were going back from pumpkin spice to pina colada? Is that what you're going? Is that the back and forth you were doing?
Margarita.
I mean, I don't like either.
There you go.
I don't like either. But yeah, I mean, so it had people like excited and then like, oh.
Right.
I mean, it just went back and forth there. But I mean, it's just been, it's been a weird weather season, I feel like.
Yeah.
But both at the beginning and then now here at the end. It's been very odd.
Yeah, and these last few weeks or beginning part of September into August, we rode together once or twice, and we're driving across, and you're definitely seeing spots. I'm thinking about the East Central Northeast in particular a few weeks ago that, I mean, there were pockets that were just drying out, and you could tell they were choking out. So on the soybean front, right, if you have any kind of conditions that are restricting root development during that early development, early planting, so I think we had some of that. Then it shows up now when we start to get dry. You have a limited root system, and so we certainly have areas of the bean fields that are just looking flat and nasty because they don't have access to water. I think both the field condition itself and the roots, and then the insult to injury on the soybeans was that we end up not having good nitrogen supply. So that was definitely showing up in the East Central Northeast that had this drought, dry conditions set in earlier. And Dana, you and I were driving together, and I said, what's going on with that corn over there? Because to me, it looked very similar, that it had this pattern of, okay, soybeans, it's easier to see. Okay, yep, it's droughty kind of conditions, probably a little nitrogen. But were you seeing similar things on the corn front, and then any other fun issues showing up at the last moment here?
Yeah, I think, you know, tar spot has been everywhere. You know, talking to Darcy Talenko, and, you know, just from the fields that I've been around the state recently, you know, we've kind of come to the conclusion that you'd be hard pressed to find a field in this entire state that doesn't have tar spot in it. The challenge with that is, you know, we've really noticed, I would say, over the last couple of weeks, the fungicides running out of steam. So a lot of fungicide spray goes on at, you know, our, you know, silking, R1, R2, brown silk, that period of time. And they give you, you know, 20, 30 days, maybe pushing 40 days with the top-end fungicides that you have. So you think about when those applications were made, you know, mid-July, mid to late July. They're running out of steam right now in terms of holding back that tar spot. The good thing is that, you know, a lot of them really push back the tar spot into dent, into that late grain fill period. So I'm not expecting a whole lot of yield loss, but in terms of just seeing it just kind of shut down that crop. So you combine, you know, certain areas like Eastern Indiana had a lot of tar spot this year, and those are areas that really haven't dealt with it in the past, and maybe some farmers that just hadn't been as aware of it as much as some of the farmers that have dealt with it in significant fashion in the past. So, you know, I'm hearing some reports of some farmers in those areas that just didn't spray, you know, in terms of they're just not used to it, and they had pretty significant yield losses in those areas. We have some plots out here and other locations that we do fungicide trials that we did not spray. I mean, that corn is pretty nasty, and it was really shutting down even before you look at early dent, and we're in those late grain fill periods. So you combine some of those areas that maybe you know, had poor fungicide coverage, or that fungicide ran out of steam too early, or they just didn't spray. Combine that with also the really hot and dry conditions. It's just kind of a double whammy where that crop is just shutting down. I mean, our goal, you know, we always talk about the importance of, you know, establishment and pollination, but the other big piece of that is grain fill. It's the weight and the size of those kernels. And what we're trying to do is just kind of optimize in terms of the size and the weight of the kernel before we hit black layer. Black layer is just physiological maturity. It's just that plant, they call it an abscission layer where the cells die, and it just cuts that kernel off from the plant, and it's done. And we're trying to find any way we can to maybe delay that a little bit in terms of, we want the filling to continue, we can optimize it, and then we hit maturity. Last year was very different. I think in many areas we saw it happen too late. We had really kind of cool conditions and some moisture out there that really delayed a lot of the maturity of the crop. I think you're seeing it in the USDA report now and that crop where, you know, corn, it just kind of, it's interesting. It just kind of senses the flow of assimilates that are going from the plant into the kernel. And when that really, really starts to slow and be impacted, then that crop says, hey, I think it's time to mature. And when you're impacted, you know, you talk about, you know, top die back and crops shutting down with tar spot in these dry conditions. And then you talk about premature ear drop where that ear shank's losing that turgidity and that flow. That's just going to tell that crop, hey, flow's slowing down. You know, I'm reaching my maximum point. I'm going to hit maturity. In a lot of cases, it's probably happening too early, and that's going to really impact the overall grain fill. And that could be a big piece when a lot of these yields start to roll in, where you think, well, maybe the yields weren't they as good as what I thought they were? You know, a lot of folks are doing kernel counts. Mm-hmm. Kernel counts are outstanding out there. We had outstanding pollination. Majority of the fields I've been in filled to the tip, look great. You know, in drought years like this, where we have years where that crop really shuts down, a lot of times it's a little more disappointing when you come to this time of year. Or on the flip side, we have really good grain fill conditions. Kernel counts maybe aren't as good, but you come back and you're kind of surprised. You're like, oh, wow, where'd this yield come from?
I think we had that last year. Where did this yield come from?
Exactly.
Right?
So that was last year. Holy cow, where'd the yield come from? You know, typically with yield estimates, really good grain fill, it's usually a little bit higher than what you thought. This year, I'm expecting with some of those yield estimates, kernel counts, it might be a little bit lower than what you thought.
Yeah, I think this year, and when you look at the USDA numbers, I mean, they've had both crops slated at state records. The August report, you know, beans were 62. The one on soy last week was 63. So, I mean, that is outstanding, knocking it out of the park. But those numbers are also based on, what, you know, 2-4 weeks estimates. So, I mean, it's not accounting for what we have been dealing with the month of September, essentially, right? So I can't see it hitting those numbers. I think seed size on the soybeans are definitely going to go down. You know, if we look at a normal size soybean, that's probably a 70 bushel bean field, you say it's 3,000 seeds per pound. That's pretty average, right? If we get down to BBs, just maybe even 3,200, 3,300 seeds, that's a 6 bushel hit when we look at seed size. So I think we're definitely going to get hit on that seed size on the soybean side.
Yeah, and you know, a lot of, John hit on it, a lot of the yield estimates are based off of, you know, kernel counts and what the, you know, total, I think the pro farmer looks at the length of kernels on the ears, right? And the most challenging and difficult point of understanding what the final yield is really the size and the weight of the grain. And it can have really significant swings in what the yield is. You know, we always talk about with yield estimates of corn, we use, you know, the fudge factor numbers of, you know, 90,000 kernels per bushel or 75,000 kernels per bushel. You just do that calculation and you can see how much that yield can swing, you know, 20, 30, 40 bushels from that aspect. So that is a factor. We'll see what the USDA yield estimates, I would expect they probably go down. They went up last month. I think we're at 210 right now. Jeez. For the state, which is just astronomical. You look at Illinois, they went down a little bit. Iowa went up a little bit. So still, I'd say still outstanding yields out there, but I do think some of those yields maybe won't be as good as what we thought.
And I want to bring up, I mean, we are in, you know, whatever word you want to call it. I don't like the word flash drought. That kind of makes me think of a flash flood, right? But I mean, a rapid drought. We have not experienced a drought this season, right? It has just been the last 2-3 weeks and coming into that. So we do still have a good crop that's out there. I don't think it's going to be the three-layer cake with the icing and with the sprinkles, but I do think it's still a good crop. And, again, we've had a season to get us to that point. It's just a matter of, okay, how much can we get in the next couple of weeks of good harvest timing?
Yeah, and I mentioned, you know, tar spot, right? But the folks that managed it really well and then did spray when they needed to spray, that crop was clean all the way, you know, through mid-dent, you know, in terms of half milk line. So really not expect, even though the tar spot's really kind of come on, I would say, in the last week or so, really not expecting much of a yield hit at all from that disease.
And that's the question from me now with tar spot coming on. Yeah, maybe for those that managed it well throughout the season, we got the yield that we needed, but tar spot's still there. Mm-hmm. Is there an impact now from it from a harvest standpoint? Is there something that we need to manage now from a harvest standpoint? Are we worried about tar spot coming in? Is there some lodging that we need to be concerned with? Do we need to get to those fields a bit earlier? Mm-hmm. But you say it's hard because we could potentially see tar spot in about every field. So then it's like, okay, how do we prioritize that?
Mm-hmm. not too much, I would say, because it came in so late. You know, one question, always stalk integrity, but if, you know, the crop is mature, it's not going to be trying to cannibalize itself to fill that last little bit of grain when it's fully impacted by tar spot. It's still important to watch those fields in case there's any, you know, impacts on stalk integrity. You know, you talk about the really drought conditions too, and pockets where it's really hot and dry. Looking at that stalk integrity is going to be really important. This time of year, what's really important for corn is just, you know, finding fields to prioritize, getting that crop out of that field so we don't have, say, you think about a tropical storm coming through, rain would be great, but if it comes with a bunch of wind and a lot of issues and you have those areas that had poor stalk integrity, you don't want to be harvesting that corn off the ground. So, monitoring those areas, you know, if there's areas that have pretty bad tar spot or are impacted by some of these, you know, really stressful conditions, looking at that stalk integrity, I always say just, you know, walk perpendicular to the rows and just kind of push on those stalks and kind of give you a pretty good estimate on how easy they're going to fall over.
Oh, I push them all every time. Yep, every Sean time I push them down.
Sean does the kick test.
Yes. Hey, yeah. So, Dan, on the soybean side, you know, when we talk about the both crops are shutting down, drought conditions, heat, all that comes into play. On the soybean side, whenever we have a nice biomass plant, a lot of leaves, good leaf production, good pod set, but then something happens to, okay, the pod fill or pod retention, a lot of times what ends up happening is, so whether it's bean leaf beetle or stink bugs cause some drop on pods, or now we got the dry condition, so now we're not filling as much. So what ends up happening, I think we were going to see this in some of our fields too, is that we're going to have all this leaf material that has photosynthates, plant sugars, right? And they're going to maintain the stems. So the stems are going to be green and pods are going to be mature. So I think we probably are going to have some fields that are going to have that green stem syndrome. Mm-hmm. There's multiple causes, but really I think it's more physiological. So guys need to be mindful of that, get the combine set, be ready to chew through some of that because the crop's going to be ready. Do you guys have to deal with anything like that that's occurring that causes harvest issues in this dry condition or offset of leaf material?
Not as big of an impact on the corn side. You know, you just think about, you know, we're not pulling a lot of that fodder through the entire machine.
True.
For the corn side, I think when you look at a disease like tar spot, it also, one thing it does is it finds every green piece of green leaf tissue it can find and it overtakes it and shuts it down. I always tell folks, a lot of the top or best yielding fields I've been in for corn, and even in our own trials and work with farmers, they have some level of green still in them. So trying to maintain, a little bit different on the corn side, if we can maintain especially the upper canopy health of that crop, that tends to be the base, you know, best yields that we can have. But in terms of having issues with residue and stuff like that, we usually don't worry about that too much.
And I'll echo, so this green stems syndrome on soybeans, it's a frustrating thing because it can occur in what I just described as, okay, anything that's reducing pods or seed fill, so that sink that's drawing on that plant sugar. So again, whether that's bean leaf beetle, stink bugs or any kind of dry conditions. But also on the other side of it is that we've got a robust plant that's grown really well. It's protected. We got a good pod load, good seed, and we've done everything well. Weather's cooperated. We finished filling all those pods and seeds out. Then we still have this photosynthate. So it'll also still maintain a green stem. So we get hit on both sides. This green stem syndrome that we talk about in soybeans has a similar high-yielding beans. A lot of times they're going to be the ones that still have green stems. This year, I dare say some of it's going to be more on the drier conditions that are causing issues on source-sink relationships.
Yeah, corn. I get more worried on corn when it gets too dry and the stalk integrity is really compromised in terms of risk from lodging, but harvest losses, poor shelling, losses out of the back of the machine when it gets too dry.
And so you're really talking about when it cannibalizes itself earlier, right? If we say, what stage would you consider it when it starts cannibalizing itself that you would be an issue? Are you talking milk stages that are
beginning dent, even earlier if it's in, impacted, but any of that, kind of later stage grain fill where that I always say the corn plant's sole goal in life is to produce yield, and produce yield as good as it can, and it'll cannibalize itself if it needs to. So one area where we see this are really poorly impacted tar spot fields that are just, the entire plant is taking over, and it's taking over, late R4, early R5 stages, or a lot of our plots that are severely nitrogen deficient. What's interesting out here is that I have the defoliation trials where we took 100% yield or leaf off those plants. So we're doing a lot of lodging tests in those fields because you can just see how much the stalk integrity is impacted. So any way that crop, if it loses, especially the upper portion of that canopy, loses some of the leaf area, it's going to do everything it can to pull from the lower, and a lot of it's from the lower portion of the stalk.
Sure.
Cannibalizes the lower portion of the stalk, also makes it a little more susceptible to some of these stalk rots and diseases at that point in time. So I get a little more nervous when you get into the really stressful conditions that may have happened in those stages where it's still grain filling and that corn plant starts to cannibalize itself and really reduce that stalk integrity.
Now, Sean, we discussed with Dan here with the corn crop and, any concerns here. He talked about tar spot. I know last year we had white mold come in late. Mm-hmm. Have we had anything like that this year with soybeans? I assume not, because we haven't talked about it, and it's been really unbelievably dry.
Yeah, no. In terms of the like white mold in particular, that came in late last year, and that one surprised us a little bit too. So in particular, last year, flowering occurred really late on a lot of that crop, and so we normally think of flowering into the June, early July, and a lot of the crop last year was in the middle of July. We think, we're past the infection point, really. But, white mold did rear its ugly head because we had moderate temperatures and good moisture conditions for those fields that have the history of it. This year, it's the flip. We flowered earlier in a lot of the crops, so we were flowering in the middle of June, looking really good, and the conditions weren't conducive for it. There has been some white mold that's popped a little bit, but I would not say it's been bad at all. In fact, you want to talk about white mold territory. I was up in Ontario giving a talk in August, right? And that area that I was in is up in the eastern part. It's white mold country. Like, that's what they have to deal with every year, and it wasn't there either. And so I just think that it has not been as much of an issue this year as it has in last year and the years past. Other diseases or concerns, I really haven't had anything major pop other than just to be aware of the red crown rot. That's been a new disease that's really been popping the last few years here within Indiana. It's a disease that's been in the south for a while, but we've got a handful of counties, maybe 5 to 7 now. I have to look back to what Darcy's put up, but it has been popping more and more, so be mindful of that. And at this point, we might still catch a few fields of it. So if you see what looks like a classic SDS symptom, so that's going to be where the leaf has intravenal, so chlorosis, yelling between the veins, that is classic SDS. But there are two other diseases that show that same symptomology: brown stem rot, and now the new one, red crown rot. So if you see that and the fields are still holding on, go out, take a look, and see if you have some of the red fruiting bodies at the stem, at the base, next to the soil. So those are the two things that I would consider about that.
Let's take a time out here on the Purdue Crop Chat, and when we come back, we talk about this kind of each year, but we need to be keeping some data here throughout harvest. I'm going to ask you guys about some of that important data to make sure folks are hanging on to, writing down, preferably keeping in, you know, maybe something better than just a notebook. But we'll talk about that when we come back here on the Purdue Crop Chat.
I'm Matthew Chapman, and I farm in Henry County, Indiana. Indiana Soybean Alliance and Indiana Corn Marketing Council invest checkoff dollars into building demand for corn and soybeans internationally. I've seen this work firsthand, and it's been eye-opening to see the growth in these markets, which also brings dollars back to our farms. Promoting U.S. corn and soybeans and increasing global demand is critical to the success of farmers right here in Indiana.
This message is brought to you by the Indiana Soybean and Corn Checkoffs.
And we're back here on the Purdue Crop Chat, the Purdue and the Indiana Corn and Soy Innovation Center. And I do want to bring up, you know, we did the last Purdue Crop Chat live stream, a video, and I was given some guff about my attire. I wore a tie. I was dressed up that day. I had, quite frankly, more important things to do that day than deal with you guys. And
it wasn't just a tie. You had a coat, sport coat on. You had the fancy. I mean, I think you were like a GQ, you know, you just ordered it directly from the magazine kind of thing.
I was told, well, I expect that the tie better, you know, better continue. So I show up and I wear the tie today. Though I don't have an actual dress shirt on,
and he's got the Hey Dudes on down below though.
Shorts.
By the way,
I've got shorts, Hey Dudes, a regular shirt. I just put the tie around my neck just to appease Sean. But I did wear the tie, so I just wanted to make it known that the tie did continue, just to class this joint up a little bit.
We need it.
I did also want to point out, Dan, there's been a lot of talk in the media recently, the Indiana media recently, about your corn and corn sweat. Have you seen all of this? Have you been taking note of the corn sweat discussion?
Yes, yes.
All 6,000 gallons.
Yeah,
an
I was
going
to say, but you know, it's funny the way they can take that and run with it. I think there are a couple national, maybe the Weather Channel or a couple national media.
I'm just curious how many ears of corn it is I have to eat before I get the corn sweats. Is it? I've had the meat sweats.
There's some other things that go on. You eat too much corn. I don't think we want to talk about that.
I wasn't sure how many ears of corn is.
You know, we haven't put in a proposal for that yet, but I'll work on that.
Is that something that the Indiana Corn Marketing Council can sponsor some research on?
Yeah, we can run it by them. A concept. Yeah.
Oh, mercy. It is going down the drains, quite literally.
Okay, well, moving on. Let's talk about what I discussed in the tease, and that is a little bit of data. We talk about this frequently as we go through harvest. And really as farmers go through anything, you guys recommend, you know, keeping some pretty good notes. Mm-hmm. And harvest time is a good a time as any to go through these things. As folks are going through, there are all sorts of tools, there are all sorts of platforms that people can go through, and not that you guys necessarily recommend one over the other. It's something that has to work. But what types of data, and Sean, I'll ask you first, what types of data should people be keeping when they're going through and harvesting their soybean field? What types of things should they be keeping? Right. I mean, because it's going to be another couple years before they're doing that again in that field, presumably, if they're going through a corn soybean rotation.
Mm-hmm. I think there's several levels to it, and what comes to my mind is when we're going out there now, 30 to 50 foot heads, it depends on where you're at, and yield maps are wonderful. I think it's a great tool, and so those are definitely ones that we want to keep. And so then you look at, okay, historically, where has this yielded well, but compare that to what I call the ground truthing, right? You know, what was the weather like that year? What was the field planting conditions like? Some of those things that you can connect with. But in particular, one step before that, and really it's now to 2 weeks earlier, is if you have access to whether it's a drone or an image, there's so much that is told there when it's connected to the ground truth. And what I talk about is the soybean will tell you what variability you have to contend with in that field. And so in particular, I think about the areas that were drying out and that they were shutting down. I've got some calls and emails on some fields that I call it the Swiss cheese fields, where there's just these, oh, they're 10-foot, 15-foot pockets that are all throughout the field that does not show up on the soil map, but it shows up by the plant itself. And so that's telling you what that soil is like, what that variability is like down below. So with all of that, that level of detail, and then if you've got some level of, hey, we were comparing two different products, if we were comparing biologicals, or we're comparing, hey, does this field really need sulfur or not? And then all of a sudden you've got that image that says, oh, all of a sudden the Swiss cheese is gone. It's all nice and looks good. It's Gouda, right? It's Gouda. I didn't even mean to go there. I saw your look. I was like, he's going to say it. I'll say it before him. But I think that you have to bring in some of that metadata. So that's going to be, okay, what did you do in terms of planting, field conditions? If you got an image of the field, I think that is a nice overlay with a yield map to kind of say, okay, how are things shutting down or not? Those are the ones that come to my mind.
And Dan, for you on corn?
Yeah, I think, you know, just learning from this year is a big piece. One thing I always come back to with corn is the hybrids. You know, hybrids can really differ in how they respond, to different inputs, but really their tolerance to stresses. Bring in tar spot for an example. We have a lot of hybrid differences with tar spot. So understanding what hybrids, you know, performed really well, what hybrids did really well, and say, you know, Sean mentioned ground truthing. You can walk some of those fields and look at, okay, this hybrid's doing a lot better on this disease than this other hybrid, or stalk integrity issues, or you know ear issues. So looking at those hybrids, you know, a lot of farmers, you know, either plant multiple hybrids in different fields, or a lot of farmers will split their planter with one hybrid or the other. So taking that time to understand, you know, what hybrids work pretty well in your operations, which ones tolerated a lot of that stress pretty well and which ones didn't. I think, you know, back to Sean's point too, prices are not great. I don't expect them to improve anytime soon. So I think especially as you go into a lot of product ordering going right now, a lot of seed ordering going on right now. So understanding what worked and what didn't, because I think one piece of this fall and as we get into next year is understanding maybe is there areas that, hey, we probably need to cut back on. And, you know, using a lot of that data is good to try and understand that. You know, we always come back to the point that, you know, every farmer should have maybe a field or two that's their research field, you know, in terms of splitting the planter or shutting off the sprayer or shutting off the starter on the planter or stuff like that. But using that data to understand, you know, man, that product really didn't do what it should have, or, you know, this product really worked well for me in this operation. So I think taking this time of year to understand what worked, what didn't, what hybrids worked well, what hybrids didn't, and just keep getting better for next year. I think that's a huge piece, and just understanding on your farm what works, what doesn't, and then keeping and tracking that data over time to keep getting better and more efficient. And then especially in a year where we're prices aren't that great, and maybe there's some areas that we could cut back on for next year.
As we start to wrap this one up here, Sean, it is dry. We've touched on this a number of times. Some things to consider with everything being so dry. You know, one, don't start any fires. That's probably
the fire.
Yes, that's probably a no brainer. Don't start any fires. But what else should folks consider with it being this dry?
Yeah. So the dryness is a number of factors. I'll echo one thing I mentioned earlier. Be timely on the soybean harvest so then you can maximize grain moisture. And we want to make sure we're selling all the water that we can and not to put the hose in the cart, so to speak. The following thing, this is really prime time for those that like to cover crop. and like to bring that seed in. So we're having some trials that we're aerial seeding, and you know, and we're also going to have some that we drill. But it's the same thing for any crop, dry seed and dry soil. It's just going to sit there, right? It's not going to germinate. It's not going to establish well. So just because you aerial seeded on Friday or you drilled doesn't mean that it's going to come up. So be mindful of that. It will take longer. Same thing on wheat. We got some acres that will go into wheat. It's going to be, you know, Hessian fly free date. Yeah, we talk about that and be in comparison to that. But boy, if we're going to have wheat seed in the ground and its forecast is still dry, yeah, we planted it on October 1st, but it's probably more like an October 10th when the rain came. So have that all in the foreground of, okay, what are the field conditions like, just like when we plant corn or soybeans, is it dry soil or not, and how that will establish, again, wheat, cover crops, whatever it is. Another one that comes to my mind is we're doing a lot of soil sampling and fertility applications after this kind of a crop. Boy, if you're taking soil samples after the harvest and it's as dry as it is, there's some numbers that are probably going to be a little off, potassium in particular. So you might want to consider either holding off a little bit till you get some rain, get some moist soil. It doesn't have to be saturated, but definitely get some conditions where the potassium numbers are going to probably be more representative. Or you take them and just know that potassium numbers might be just a little off whenever you have dry soil, super dry soil sampling.
And Dan, you've got kind of a new project underway that you wanted to chat about here a little bit. Yeah. And it's kind of an important one, one that, you know, we've been talking about here for the past couple, maybe several years that some farmers have been getting a little upset about it once they get to the elevator or the ethanol plant.
Yeah. I was going to first say that, you know, for Sean's point on the wheat, that the old adage is you plant wheat into dust, the bins will bust.
There you go. So I like it. No. Some old-timey sayings here.
Old-timey sayings, you know, from the young guy.
Well, on our way with some of the small grains. But, important research project that Darcy Talenko and myself are leading, you know, supported by Indiana Corn and kind of, you know, working with some ethanol buyers and stuff like that, and understanding mycotoxins, you know, ear rots in corn. It's something that kind of has gotten worse. It's been around for a long period of time. It's something we always kind of keep an eye on. But really, you look at, you know, kind of northeast Indiana, eastern Indiana, Ohio really deals with it quite a bit. Michigan deals with it. And then, you know, Sean mentioned being both of him and I were up in Ontario this year, and they really deal with it. The folks up in Ontario were joking. You know, they kind of said quietly, I'm glad an I state has mycotoxins, so maybe stuff, you know, can get moving along on this subject. So, but yeah, it's the ear rots, you know, mycotoxins. What's really challenging about those is they're not often visual in the field. And we can often see them in cases like last year. We had a lot of really bad areas. You look at northern Indiana, northeast Indiana, that dealt with it really bad last year. But also the farmers I talked to that had really big problems, I did ask them, you know, what were your yields? And they said, well, they were the best yields I've ever had. So in areas that, you know, you look at in terms of, you know, probably last year, I don't expect it being as much of an issue this year because harvest is going to be so much quicker and the crop really dried down. But in those years like last year where that grain just doesn't mature and it just stays out in the field and it stays at a certain moisture, we can have those ear rots proliferate on those ears. And the challenge is that it's often pretty difficult unless you're walking the field, pulling husks, and looking at the grain. You can't really identify it. You know, there's some indications on if that, you know, the husk is starting to senesce early, stuff like that. But it may not be until you take that grain to sell it and it gets tested, and then next thing you know, you're either getting a big dockage or you're getting rejected. And that's really disheartening for a lot of farmers, especially in areas that had really good yields in certain areas. So that's something we're trying to tackle, trying to do a lot more research on this. You know, we talk about harvest, you know, harvest timing is a big piece of that. You know, a big thing with mycotoxins, you know, and a lot of the old data that, and work that's been done fairly recently is just getting the grain out of the field. You know, when that corn stays out in the field and it stays at a certain moisture, that's when we can have issues with these ear rots. So, hey, do we need to harvest a lot earlier, dry it down a lot quicker, maybe eat a little bit more drying costs, but maybe that's better than having a full dockage at the elevator. So there are a lot of questions on this in terms of fungicides. You know, when do we time fungicides? That timing might be a little bit shorter window, maybe a little bit different than some of the foliar diseases that we work with. So a lot of questions on that front. You know, one thing we're going to start this fall, and we'll start sending out more information and kind of a call out, is just having farmers, if they can, just send us a 2-pound sample of grain coming out of, you know, it can be out of the, straight out of the truck, out of the grain cart, out of the spout on the combine, just any way we can. We're trying to do, you know, kind of a tracking of where the ear rots are at. You know, Darcy's done an outstanding job of tracking, you know, tar spot around the state. Hey, can we do kind of a similar aspect in trying to understand, okay, these are the really problem areas. These are where the diseases are. You know, we're going to do a full screening. It's a, you know, pretty expensive test, but we've been fortunate in working with Indiana Corn Marketing Council to get some funding to be able to support a lot of these tests. So we'll be sending out more information too, and talking to farmers and soliciting farmers, hey, can we have a 2-pound grain sample? Keep everything anonymous, right? And send that data to you to give you an idea of what's out there. So that's something we're going to start tracking. And then as we get to next year, we're going to really start diving into a lot of the agronomic questions in terms of hybrids and harvest timings and fungicides, and really trying to understand this question, because, you know, working with some of the big ethanol buyers, it's a huge problem in the ethanol process. You think about, you know, livestock feed, you know, issues on that. It's a huge problem there. It's, you know, economically detrimental to a lot of farmers. And it's just kind of gotten a little bit worse. And I think, you know, probably a lot of the environmental conditions that we've had can be a part of that. I'm also wondering if maybe we're pushing it a little bit too much in terms of maturities, and maybe multiple fungicide sprays that keep that crop maybe too green too long later in that season.
And yeah, maybe, but you just got done telling me that I want green stocks so I have high yield. So which is it, Dan?
That's a good question.
Okay, that's his question.
And that's the challenging part, right? Often the best yields that we see is in a lot of our work is, you know, extending that grain fill and keeping it as green as long as we can. But is our other question is on the flip side of that, are we making ear rots potentially worse?
It's a corn agronomist prerogative. He changes mind whenever he wants to. Mm-hmm.
Exactly. You know, we're you know, extension people. We got to, you know, have the, it depends on
it. It depends. It reminds me of in my cotton days that, you know, have high yield but had poor quality, right? And so this is a different kind of issue of quality. Yep. And so you do have to have that balance, right? You want a product that you can sell. So obviously I'm giving you a hard time, but that certainly does make sense.
Yeah, and we, you know, I used to work with sugar beets in Michigan. It was kind of the same thing, right? You could push tonnage on those beets, but if you're sugar, you know, this, it's kind of inversely related. So that, you know, that's a question we don't really know. You know, a lot of the farmers that I talked to in kind of northern Indiana, I think we're pushing on the maturities, you know, putting 113, 114 day hybrids up in those areas, and it just was not drying down. So there's a lot of questions on this. We've got a couple grad students that we're bringing on that we're going to start tackling these questions next year. So it'll be a big, pretty big effort supported by Indiana Corn. So looking forward to getting a lot of these data. And then I'm going to also sneak in that phantom yield loss question into this. That's a whole nother, we could spend a whole nother hour, you know, debating that question with farmers. But that's something I get asked every year too. So we're gonna try and, you know, tackle that question as well with the harvest timing combined with the ear rots and the phantom yield loss.
Figure out the corn sweats thing too. So we'll...
I'll say this on the corn sweat. A lot of the national reports, I think Sean talked about, it's like 4,000 to 6,000 gallons per acre.
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
What's an inch of rain per acre in gallons? Over 27,000 gallons. We always joke that probably the trees and lawns are probably, I mean, it obviously the crop is transpiring. We're introducing, you know, more moisture into the air. But I don't think it's as big of an issue as what they say.
Yeah, so. You get corn sweats from something else.
Yeah, exactly.
I've got a lot more jokes. I don't think I should say them. Sean, Indiana soybean yield at the end of the season will be?
That is such a tough one. You want me to pin a number with the way this is at? I'm going to.
Yes.
Yeah. He wants a number.
I don't think we're hitting 63. 62 is going to be a push. I'll be the weasel, 61.5.
Dan, Indiana corn yield will be?
So we were at 207, went up to 210. I still think we're probably, you know, whether they push this number that far down, I'd like to be in that, you know, back in my original yield estimate at 204, 205 area. So I'll say
you got to pick
205.
205.
There
we go.
What's the difference? I did the
204.5.
204.5. That does it for this edition of the Purdue Crop Chat. We thank you for joining us. We will do it again next time. Let's all stay safe out there. This is National Farm Safety and Health Week. So stay safe out there. And we'll be back in your combine again here soon. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks.
This has been Purdue Crop Chat, a regular series featuring Purdue Extension's Dr. Dan Quinn and Dr. Sean Castile, made possible by the Indiana Corn and Soybean Checkoffs, the Indiana Corn Marketing Council, and the Indiana Soybean Alliance. The Checkoffs are pleased to help bring you agronomy insights from Purdue Extension. Opinions on the podcast are those of the host and guests and not those of the sponsor. Purdue Crop Chat is a service of Purdue University Extension and Hoosier Ag Today. Timely, relevant, credible.